The Guardian.
Hello and welcome to Tech Weekly from The Guardian. I'm Keith Stewart and I'm standing on Brighton Beach in the wind and drizzle with a noisy game of beach volleyball going on in the background. Sadly, I'm not on holiday. The good thing is I'm here for the Develop Conference, a three-day event in which the cream of the global video game industry get together to discuss the latest innovations, ideas and what to drink at the pub at 5 o'clock when it's all finished. In the next half hour, we discuss the state of game development with industry veterans Greg Zaychuk, Tim Schafer and Casper Field. We talk to Peter Molyneux, game design legend, about Fable 3. And Jonathan Smith from the leading British studio Traveller's Tales gives his reaction to Ed Vaize's keynote speech about the government's promised support for the UK games industry. So pull up a deck chair, unwrap a stick of rock and enjoy our report from the technological equivalent of a Punch and Judy show that is Develop Brighton. We're here in a modest suite at the Brighton Metropole Hotel with the sea sparkling in through the French windows. And with me are three equally glittering luminaries from the games industry. With me, I have Tim Schafer, founder of Double Fine Productions, responsible for Brutal Legend and Psychonauts. In the 90s, though, Tim was part of the LucasArts team that produced some of the funniest games ever made. Titles like Monkey Island, Day of the Tentacle, Grim Fandango. A real comic legend of the video games industry. I also have Greg Zaychuk, co-founder of BioWare, the creator of Mass Effect and Dragon Age, two of the biggest and most respected adventure game franchises in the world. And finally, we have Casper Field from Local Boys Relentless Software, based just up the road. Casper's the executive producer on the Buzz series of quiz games, which have sold something like 10 million copies since they were launched a few years ago on PlayStation 2. And Casper's here really is our casual games expert. So, first of all, Tim Schafer, what are you doing in Brighton at Develop?
I'm giving a talk about Double Fine and what we've been doing lately and what we're going to do in the future. And it's our 10-year anniversary. So just kind of looking back on what we've been through. And I say it like it's a bad thing. I mean, the adventures we've had and what we've learned from them. And hopefully people will just at least be able to listen to it and be like, oh, someone's had it tougher than me.
What have you learned from the last 10 years?
A lot of things. Mostly the problem I'm kind of mentally trying to solve in my head is that we've been around for 10 years and we've made two games. So this model of really, really big games that cost $30 million and the effect that has on you creatively and what it has on you business-wise, there are all these implications to that, and really trying to think of different solutions to that problem.
And Greg, talking about massive £30 million developments, obviously. Your keynote this morning, Greg gave a keynote this morning basically on how BioWare has been successful, which I'm sure probably a lot of people were desperate to find out. But one of the things you said was that AAA development is now something that most developers actually shouldn't be thinking about at all.
It's not specifically dangerous, but it's one of those goals that shouldn't necessarily be the goal everyone strives for. I think historically, over the last 10 years, that's what we've all thought, oh, that's the pinnacle. But I think right now we're seeing that it's not really the pinnacle it once was, and secondarily there's all these other types of games that are coming out, whether it's social, browser, flash, all these other options that iPad, iPhone, that are becoming I think it's as big or bigger. We'll see. It's going to be, if you want to reach a lot of people, like the AAA consoles, not necessarily in the place to do that.
And Casper, you must be working on the Buzz series, which was doing casual games about, well, obviously Buzz started about 10 years ago, I guess. There must be a feeling at Relentless that everyone now is saying casual games, they're the next big thing. And you must be all be sitting there thinking, hang on, we were doing this years ago.
Everyone just caught up. I mean, yeah, it's not quite been 10 years, but it's. I think with Buzz, We were one of the first games to obviously do a peripheral title, right? So
you had a special Buzz controller.
That's right. So the Buzz games come obviously with the Buzz controllers. So we're responsible for an awful lot of mileage of cabling that's kind of scattered around Europe. It is interesting now to see the seeds of those that were started with those games like Buzz, SingStar, and the Guitar Hero franchise. You now kind of really bloom into kind of new areas, so obviously with the arrival of Facebook and everything else.
One of the key themes, I think, for all of you here has been the rise of casual and social gaming. And there seems to be, within the hardcore games industry, people are thinking, well, is casual and social gaming something we should get into or something we should see as a threat for the time that our gamers are spending with our games? I mean, what do you all think? Because you were saying, Greg, that you're actually looking into it, BioWare. You're looking into casual games, and you've actually done a Facebook game. And
I don't see it as a threat, I guess, because I don't see it as taking players away from hardcore games. So I think it's bringing in new people. It's not taking people away from us, but maybe I'm just optimistic about that.
It's interesting. I think it was this past year at GDC, there was almost, in the hardcore gaming folks, a bit of maybe anger or resentment towards the social stuff, because I think the fact that it suddenly has become so prominent, all of a sudden they're stealing the spotlight, and you know, we've worked so hard for like a decade to get the spotlight. But I think it's just reality. I think the fact that, you know, our games are gated by this really complicated controller that if you haven't trained for 5 years to know where all the buttons are, you won't actually figure out. And you know, the fact that there's other games out there that are way easier to access. And suddenly, hey, lo and behold, it's also very familiar themes, and they're doing better than us, at least from a numbers perspective. I think that's the big picture is a lot more complicated than that, because it's all over the place. I think there's also a lot of free flash stuff that people don't realize, and there's so much stuff out there for people. The amount of game playing going on right now is probably the most it's ever been, but people, if you look at it through a retail lens, which is how a lot of the big companies look at it, it doesn't look like it, but there's just crazy stuff going on in the market.
If the audience has gone to other platforms, if they are now playing Farmville instead of playing Buzz, then we need to, you know, if we're serious about that audience, then we need to go where they're going, you know. But that's something we're kind of thinking about at the moment.
Do you all see a convergence coming in the future? We might not have hardcore games and casual games. Do you see a future where Dragon Age might have components which are playable in Facebook, which can then sort of translate into the main game? And this sort of idea of cross-platform gaming. We already did that.
I mean, like, there was a Flash Dragon Age game that actually, like, the stuff you would earn in the Flash game came into the main game. Like, we're at the nascent stages of that, but I think that's, you know, it's going to go a franchise basis, and you never know, maybe there'll be actually a deep Farmville RPG at some point.
And Tim, is it interesting for you in that while you're working on big games like Brutal Legend, and I don't know what you've got coming up next, and don't know whether you're allowed to talk about it, but at the same time as you're working on these big productions in your as Double Fine, in the background, at the same time, Secret of Monkey Island and recently Secret of Monkey Island 2 have both come out on iPhone and iPad, and they're doing amazingly well, and they're really loved still. Is that strange for you to have this kind of reverberation of your career coming along the kind of casual line while you're working on these sort of larger games?
Strange in that we're not getting paid for it, I guess. That's one thing that's strange about it. Yeah, it is interesting. I mean, it's funny that those were the big games that we were. I mean, those were huge, expensive games at the time. Like, I think they were like $200,000 or, you know, 9 whole months to make. And now there are these small things that people have on their telephones. That's a little strange. But we made really casual games. Hyper-casual, you might call them, on our website. But we haven't made looked into Facebook games that much, because I think you have to hit that point where you feel inspired, I guess. That's one thing, is when you're, you know, looking at a Facebook game and being like, oh, I see something really great I could do with this. So I think that we're kind of waiting for that moment to happen.
One big thing that's sort of come up in the industry over the last year has been this idea that the traditional console cycle as we know it, this 5-year console cycle, has been broken down because people can't afford to bring out lots more consoles. So what we're getting instead is these new kind of technical gimmicks like 3D and motion control, which are kind of almost replacing new hardware in this cycle. What do you all think about 3D graphics and motion control as legitimate game elements?
I'm big on one and not so big on the other, right? I mean, for me, I think the motion control, and also I should step back actually and say, I think that the extension of the life cycle is such a great thing. The industry just last time, I think from PS2 to PS3, really rushed into making that transition, and it didn't need to. And spent a lot of money and left a lot of money on the table in the process. And so I'm really pleased that it's not happening this time around. And I think motion control is, you know, the right step to take. You know, I don't know whether it's the most innovative step to take, but I think that what both Sony and Microsoft are doing is interesting in different ways, right? When it comes to 3D, I don't get it. I really don't get it.
But it's in three dimensions.
It's coming at you.
Not just two.
And should I mention the term eye gouging? Is it eye gouging? Is that what they say in the ads? Oh, eye popping. That's what it is. Which has got to be the worst thing. It's just terrible.
I mean, people will solve some of the problems, but I've played like a driving game and the dashboard's like 2 inches from my face, which is not what the bit of the racing game I really want to pay attention to. And I played a third-person shooter and the character's like right up against me and I'm trying to focus on what's happening in the distance. And you know, for me right now, it's not working.
Well, no, and I think it's interesting, too, because we actually had 3D working before. Like, there were the shutter glasses on the PC, like, again, last century. Like, in 96, we had, like, our first game, Shattered Steel. We actually had 3D shutter glasses, which is effectively the same technology. So it's absolutely nothing new. And all I got from those was a headache. And because the glasses were really uncomfortable. They squeezed your head. But then I think this is the other interesting thing is the reality of 3D is a lot of people can't actually even endure it unless it's, like, perfectly done. I'm excited on the DS side of things, though. I mean, like, the 3D DS was really, really cool. And you can personally adjust where the screen is by just moving where you're holding it or flip a little switch. It was really, really compelling. And so I think that kind of 3D implementation, much more so than everyone wants to watch, like, golf wearing crazy glasses, is going to be more successful.
So it's not going to be Mass Effect 3D. The next.
It'll be eye popping if we do it. Just, you know. or gouging.
Yeah. Gouging. It's somewhat. It's great problem for someone else to worry about because it's like something. Yeah. Someone else is going to carry that couch upstairs, and once it's in the room and it's in the perfect position, I might sit on it. But until then, someone else's problem.
What about motion controls? I mean, you've both done big kind of action adventure type games. I mean, at the moment, everything that we're seeing from Play and Kinect are all very much kind of casual games. They're very much quiz games and pet games and multi-sport games. Do you really foresee, and what can Microsoft are saying? Well, there's going to be a second generation of games which are kind of hardcore games that use motion controls. I mean, do you see that as a possibility? Are we going to see Brutal Legend 2
I mean, those are the first games that leap to mind, I guess. I see it more as having a lot of opportunity for kids and family games because it just looks healthier when you watch kids playing with Kinect. It just looks like they're jumping around. Like, I would rather see my kid doing that even than seeing them, like, flopped out on the couch with a controller.
Actually, it's sort of like the couch analogy used earlier. I think we're sort of poking at the couch a bit, but, you know, we're going to wait till it gets up at least upstairs into the room.
You're
and then,
standing next to it, saying, yeah, a little, like, higher.
You know, I don't think you can do the whole thing. I mean, if you're making a 10, 20, 30-hour experience, you know, you can't stand there for 10 hours, like, doing something. But, you know, again, waving your arms for more than 10 minutes is very tiring. So it's still hard for me to imagine how it's going to take shape.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's going to be, if there are games for hardcore gamers for those devices, then they're going to be new experiences. But there's lots of fun you can have. We've just done some mini games for the new Buzz game that used the Move controller with augmented reality. So, you know, in Buzz, you're answering quiz questions, right? So we've done, like, whack-a-mole, where you're smacking the right answer.
And, that's cool.
You know, this kind of stuff. And it's really, really quite a novel experience for people to see themselves on screen with a giant cartoon mallet, right? It's like, they really enjoy it.
Rarely ever happens.
A lot of people have seen Roger Rabbit, though, you know, and it kind of has echoes of that experience, and people enjoy it a lot.
What do you feel, for the industry? Basically, Develop is a kind of a conference where everyone from the industry gets together and talks about development. What value do these events have for the industry? And what specifically have you guys got out of being here?
For us, it's a lot of meeting people and talking about stuff. Like, you know, you hear about what people are doing. You learn about, like, new things coming down the pipe. I think for us, I mean, we're sincere in that. We like talking about how we do things. We like sharing it. Like, we've had people... it's funny because we used to do this. We did pretty frequently at GDC over the years, and people would come back years later and say, "Oh, I saw your talk at GDC 3 years ago." And we structured our studio like that, and it's worked great. I mean, you know, we're not. I mean, I think the more good development practice being used across all studios all over the world, the better. You know, like, that's. I mean, the more good games that come out, the stronger the studios are, and the developers are, the better we will be as an industry. It's been interesting for us having gone from, you know, true independence to be teamed with the pandemic, then being part of EA and having, like, dozens of developer colleagues to talk to. And so being part of something bigger now, we see there's a certain benefit to actually just, like, yeah, when you have a development challenge, development problem, you've got this huge audience of people that you could, or a group of people you could throw the problem into, and you'll get all kinds of cool answers back.
Yeah, I remember one of the very first GDCs I went to, and you guys were there, and we had both used Lua, right? I think that was a big thing.
Yeah.
And we used it on Grim Fandango, and you guys are using it. And
it's on Wiki, too.
What's Lua, so I can use it?
Lua is a free scripting language.
From Brazil.
From University of Rio, I believe.
But like you said, it was like the concept of, hey, we use that.
We use that. And it wasn't like this feeling of, like, oh, dang, we wanted to be the only people using that. It was more like, oh, that's awesome that someone else is using it because I thought we were crazy.
Well, I think it's partially the fact that we're all still, like, honestly still finding our way. Like, even having been doing it for a while, just the nature of the industry is it's continually reinventing itself. And I mean, you touched on earlier how good a thing it was that there's no, the console cycle hasn't started again, because whenever that starts, you press this button of, okay, now we're in the dark again, and you have to relearn everything. So much of our time is spent in the dark figuring stuff out. Is, yeah, when you find someone else, it's like, it confirms your decision isn't, like you said, a crazy one.
Casper Field from Relentless, Tim Schafer from Double Fine, Greg Zaychuk from BioWare, thanks so much for being with us this afternoon.
I'm Alice Taylor. I'm Commissioning Editor for Education at Channel 4. One of the big themes of this year's develop is definitely gamification of everything. It's this idea that you can apply game mechanics to other stuff and make that other stuff more fun. And so there's this kind of realization that game designers can be used all over the place and, you know, can get jobs elsewhere. Examples from the obvious ones like Foursquare, which is turning kind of location finding, finding cool places into something playful and more game-like. And then there's just lots of people around talking about how, like, banks and institutions are going to start adding leveling up and points and achievements to kind of everyday stuff.
I'm Simon Oliver from Hand Circus. We created Rolando. And I think in terms of things that I've seen so far at develop, the thing that really sticks in my mind the most is the talk from Pixar. They talked about the creative process, about how they go from drawing stage all the way through the final movie. And they also showed a load of shots of the campus, of what it is that they work in, the place, the location they work. I think mostly to inspire jealousy. One of the things that they get asked is it really as good as they say? Is it the best place to work? And he said, yeah, it genuinely is the best place on earth to work. So, yeah, it was very inspiring.
Hi, I'm Jason Avent from Black Rock Studios. I'm a game director there. I saw a talk yesterday on Batman Arkham Asylum. It was the art director from Batman Arkham Asylum. And it just seemed to, he was a really talented guy. His presentation was really, really clever. The key thing that came out of it for me was that he lit and composed scenes to guide people through levels. And he anticipated that people have a natural ability to be able to frame a shot as long as you compose it right. So even though games are interactive and you can have the camera wherever you like, if you make levels in the right way and you're clever about the composition, you can kind of make people frame the shot for you. It's actually a new way of looking at it. And it means that you don't have to worry about where the camera's going to go, because usually there is only one way to frame it. It's very clever.
My name is Charles Cecil. I'm the Managing Director of Revolution Software and creator of the Broken Sword games. The speech I was looking forward to particularly was Tim Schafer's talk about adventure games and the future of adventure games, because he gets asked questions that are quite similar to the questions that I get asked, and in many ways he's in a very similar position to us, in that he is a creator who's found it very hard to continue under a fairly malign environment dominated by retailers and publishers. And like him, we have wonderful opportunities with digital distribution and the opportunity to appeal directly to our audience.
This year at Develop, there's been a lot of talk about scaling down and working on small games. With AAA titles costing up to $100 million to produce these days, it's no wonder a lot of developers are finding the business just too scary to get involved with. That may be true for most developers, but not all. Peter Molyneux of Lionhead Studios has been working on Epic Games for the last 20 years, and he was here at Develop talking about the forthcoming release of the third title in the excellent Fable series. Molyneux's presentation dealt with some of the mistakes he'd made on Fable 2, and so when I met up with him afterwards, I asked him what he'd learned from those mistakes and how they'd come about in the first place.
I think a lot of the problem is that the way that we work at the moment means that the actual game that you have comes together remarkably late. You know, it's only been really and truly the last few weeks almost that you could actually play the entirety of the game with the right pace to it, with the right currency. And that means that there's a lot of gotchas in there. When you sit down and design a game, you kind of have your mental design cornerstones, the foundation stones that make up a computer game. And they, you know, normally they're things like, okay, we'll put the mini-map on the left, we'll put the tutorial thing on the right, we'll have the buttons appear here. No, why? Well, that's the way we did it before. But as the game, as the games industry moves on and as our skill increases, we're starting to realize that those cornerstones, you know, they end up dragging us down. And then lastly, and most importantly, just looking at what people say, you know, rather than asking them a series of questions, what did they enjoy and what didn't they enjoy?
Do you think that your fundamental approach to game design, let's say since Populous, which is obviously a very long time ago, do you think it's evolved because of experience, or do you think there have been a series of kind of stalling lurches in the way that you approach game design?
Yeah, I mean, there's one thing which I don't think I've lost, and that is my inability to experience fear. I don't mean calling myself brave, but I don't seem to have the same doubt circuits that most normal, rational people have. So rather than me as a sensible, well-balanced human being write down a list of here's why we shouldn't do this, I just obsess about how exciting it will be to do this. And I think that leads you into a place which kind of people call innovation, I guess. I call it, you know, I really like this because wouldn't it be cool to play that? The bad side is that sort of innovational approach can lead you into some very, very difficult, tough times. Mm. Because very often you haven't got something to fall back on. And the most tricky thing of all, in my experience, which I've experienced so many times, even with the original Populous, you know, I had to go around to 11 publishers back in the day before somebody said, okay, we'll take the game and publish it, is to try and get people to understand what you're making before you actually finish it. Because you can go in, you know, like with the Populous, like, you know, I could go in, I'm making this game where you play a god. What do you mean a god? Have you got any guns? No, you don't know. Not that sort of god. What, you know, and what does it mean? And you try and describe it with words, where the only thing really that can describe and get the idea across, because it is something that's different, is actually, you know, is actually playing it.
During your keynote earlier on, you mentioned the fact that you'd asked a lot of journalists about the story from Fable 2, and no one could remember it. I'd actually extend that. I'd say that almost 80% of games, probably more, if you ask a journalist to explain the story, they probably wouldn't be able to do it. Yeah. Because often they're too convoluted or they're too generic. Yeah. You've said with Fable 3 what you want to do is create a story which stays with people. When you were first started thinking, right, okay, this is what we've got to do, what are your solutions to that problem? Because it's a big problem, because it's the one that everyone in the industry is having problems with, I think.
There's three basic solutions. Firstly is the big arc. Almost the kind of the hero's journey of the film. What's it about? You ask yourself, if I'm down a pub and I've just played Fable, how do I describe that story to a friend? So if the story of Fable 3 is this simple, you're a rebel, you become a king, you can run a kingdom. That's nice and clear. Second is the characters and who plays them and the dialogue and making sure there are memorable little moments in there. And a lot of the trick here, a lot of my memorable moments in films are in those high points of emotion, when I laugh and when I'm kind of super emotionally engaged. I'm not saying crying necessarily, but that's a typical example. In previous games that I've done, it's just been one typical long, big adventure. And okay, you've got a big explosion off in the corner, but I've seen 1,000 of those explosions. That's the second thing. And the third thing is make sure a person feels emotionally engaged and cares about the world. And that's where Fable, I think, wins out, because you can kind of be who you want to be the king, the husband, the wife, the bastard that you want to be, and that makes it more memorable. And you've got characters around that reflect that individuality.
What I'm interested in the whole Fable series, and this seems to be coming into game design more, is this idea of moral choices. 5 years ago, this was very, very simple. But I think through things like Mass Effect and Heavy Rain and through the Fable series, we're seeing much more about moral navigation, more than just moral choices. It's more like, you know, games used to be about left and right, but now they're about, you know, right and wrong.
I think it's emotional choices, not moral choices, because life is never that simple. It's never just about pleasing this person just because you promised something a couple of years ago, because without spoiling anything about the game, there's a reason why not fulfilling some of those promises may be actually the right thing to do.
One of the key themes that seems to have come up at Develop over the last couple of days has been the idea that a lot of big developers are suddenly going, Christ, AAA games are incredibly expensive, incredibly scary. And in some ways, it seems to be some veteran game designers have almost become refreshed by this idea of suddenly working on smaller projects. At Lionhead and with your project that we can't talk about at Microsoft, you always seem to be involved in massive, epic, long-running projects these days. Isn't there a part of you that thinks, wouldn't it be great if I could get me and two guys from Lionhead and let's just sit down and let's write an iPhone game in 3 months, or let's do a Facebook app in 2 weeks? Is that in any way appealing to you?
Yeah, I mean, you look back into the old times of when I was a programmer and when I sat in a room with a huge box of pizzas on one side and a massive ashtray of cigarette butts on the other, and you think, oh, those are the glory days and those were the most creative. And I love that. I love the idea of going into a room and inventing stuff and then seeing that stuff weeks instead of years later. Absolutely, I do. I don't think that I want to give up doing the big AAA games for the sake of doing the small games. I just want to do both. And that's exactly what I am doing. I mean, I can't tell you any details about that, but I love that idea and the freshness and creativity. But here's the thing, and this is purely a personal issue. Facebook games, mobile games, all of this stuff, this is a gold rush. The gold rush is going to come to an end. Be sure, be absolutely sure that our consumers, they actually don't want a game that was written in 2 weeks. I promise you, they don't. And it's when games come along that actually have been crafted and thought about and balanced and refined. Because this little puppy here? It's really powerful. It could do those games.
Point out Peter's pointing to an iPad as he says this.
and Windows Mobile 7 is just as powerful. But, this stuff, this technology gets more and more powerful, and that makes going to mean the production qualities go up.
It sounds very much as though you are incredibly still hands-on with the day-to-day running and design process. When you go into Lionhead in the morning and say, I've had a great idea, does everyone go, oh, shit, what's this going to be? Or is it more like you all come together and come up with ideas? How does that work? Because sometimes we get the feeling of like people like you and Miyamoto and Kojima, we tend to think of you as almost being separate and directorial. But do you still feel, is it not you handing down the tablets?
Yeah. Sometimes I walk through the office and I could just feel that, people are about to throw knives in my back or they just love to see me drop dead that second, because, the last thing that they want is some creative idiot coming in and saying, oh, that's rubbish, let's do it this way. And other times, it's just this wonderful, incredible feeling of mutual discovery, of saying, hey, that doesn't work, why doesn't that work? And that really feels like we're all one team. So I think you do, and this is me speaking personally, it's probably wrong, there's probably a million people who work 10 times better than me. Sometimes you need a creative tyrant. You need someone to come in and say, look, we're just going to do it this way. I'll tell you why we're going to do it this way, but, we're just going to do it. Other times you need to have a great chairman that takes all those views and sort of involves people and finding the balance between those two is the right thing. I actually got it completely wrong on Fable 1. I was far, far too tyrannical, far, far too late. I was a bit better on Fable 2. I think I've got it just right on Fable 3.
In last month's budget, George Osborne abandoned plans to provide tax breaks for the UK games industry. Facing a possibly hostile reception, Culture Minister Ed Vasey gave a keynote at Develop, reiterating his support for the industry and listing a series of initiatives, including reductions in corporate tax, which he thinks will help UK developers. But was it enough? Afterwards, I spoke to Jonathan Smith from Traveller's Tales, the successful British developer behind the Lego Star Wars and Batman games, and got his reaction.
We're proud to be a major development company based here in the UK, proudly employing great people from this country and doing good work, which we think is successful across the world. So we were very pleased to see interest from the government where they expressed support for the work that we're doing, that other companies here in this country are doing. What I look forward to hearing from the minister is a statement of the criteria by which these expressions of support can be judged in the future. So what are the objectives that are being set now, concretely, that in a few years the minister be able to look back and say, here is what we have achieved through our support for this industry, that isn't just a continuation of discussions and talks, some of which have been going on for quite some time now.
Ian Livingston last week was saying that, well, maybe we should shift our focus now and go, OK, we're not going to get tax incentives. Let's think of another way that we can approach the government and gain support. Would you kind of go along with that? Would you say, for the industry now, let's put this whole tax incentive drive to bed and think of other ways that we can gain support from the government and from the Treasury?
There are lots of incredibly smart people such as Ian who are working very hard tactically on how to achieve the best level of engagement with the government. All I'm saying is I would like to hear from them a concrete proposition about what their support that they are currently expressing will add up to in the few years. So in the future, we can look back and see whether that was achieved.
Okay, Jonathan, thanks very much. That's all from our programme at Develop this year. Alex Kratowski is back with you in the studio next week, seeing how some of Tech Weekly's elevator pitches have done with their web startups, and the team will also be discussing whether you should use your real identity online. Thanks to Peter Molyneux, Jonathan Smith, Tim Schaefer, Greg Zaychuk and Casper Field. I'm Keith Stewart, and that was Tech Weekly from The Guardian. Thanks for listening.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.